My name is Jim Kenny. I'm a Linux zealot, sysadmin, beer drinker, metal basher, like iron metal basher. And I got roped into doing this somehow. Apparently people seem to think I know what I'm doing. Clearly I'm going to show you how wrong they are. Next.
I'm Ted Wood, also a sysadmin at Georgia Tech. And I know Jim and got asked through the mailing list for Atlanta Linux enthusiasts.
And my name is Dylan. I too responded to the call of, hey, anybody want to do a thing at Dragon Con? And I'm here anyway, so I figured I'd talk about Linux.
So let's get a quick show of hands. How many people actually run Linux on a daily basis on your own hardware? Woo. We are in the right room.
Yes.
How many people get paid to run Linux if for whatever reason? How many people would like to get paid to run Linux for whatever reason? How many people would like to get paid to not do the job they're currently doing? Maybe. How many people want to get paid to get drunk? All right. Notice all the sysadmins raised their hand on that one. Nasty statistic, and we'll get started with the show here. It seems that for the people that are systems administrators, there was a statistic that went out for the number of folks that leave their profession before the age of normal retirement. And they found that 90% of the former IT professionals go into the alcohol industry. 5% go into religion. Yeah, that says something. Probably not very good. All right, we're going to talk about systemd. Anybody not know what systemd is? All right. When your system starts up, something has to make all the crap run. So historically, it's been a collection of bash scripts. For your Linux system, it's been system5 init. We translated over from old school stuff. It worked. It did what it was supposed to. But somewhere along the way, somebody thought we'd make a change. Is it a good idea or not? Well, it's new. It's better. It's faster. It's shadowed. It's easier. Wait a minute. Hold on. And everybody's doing it.
So now is the time when I should... I mean, when do you want me to jump in here?
I think I may have one more button. Let's see what happens. The development team is loved. Yeah. Dylan's going to have fun with these. I set him up. Go ahead.
Yeah. So it is new. It was brought about by some developers who work for Red Hat, and it had a really great idea. Hey, let's take what Solaris did for Solaris 11 in the service management facility and make startup faster for Linux, which is a great idea. Because starting up your Linux box sometimes takes a little long with the old style init and RC scripts and such. Better. The idea is good for me. I think the implementation... hold on just a second. Anybody here a kid? And do we want to try to keep this family friendly?
No.
Okay. Better? No, I don't think so. I think it actually sucks a lot. Faster? Yeah. Starting up from zero to... login a lot faster. I will totally admit that. Easier? No. It's changing the way that system administration is done on Linux and the way that it has been done for 20 some years. And everyone's doing it? No. I know a lot of people who are not upgrading to Red Hat 7 or CentOS 7 because systemd sucks ass.
We got a question on the front down here. Wait, we got a microphone. We're recording all this, so wait until the microphone box hits you in the head.
Yeah, and it's a nice and fuzzy button, microphone, so you don't have to worry about it.
It's more a statement. It's not just changing the way system administration is working. It's also changing the way that development is working on systemd-enabled boxes, because core dumps and everything now go through journal control.
Oh, no. I thought we were going to get at that
feature later.
But yeah, it's not just startup. It's not just replacing init.d scripts. It's not just replacing init as your process one. It's replacing logging. It's replacing profiling of your system. And now, I love the timing on this. It's replacing SU. Yay! Because how many years... 30, 40 years we've had SU, and everybody's been complaining about it all that time, so let's re-implement it. You know what I want also systemd to replace? And this is my sarcasm voice. I want it to replace SSH. Can we get HTTP included in there as well? Because
it
seems like...
If it updates the documentation from the Apache team, man, I'm all for it.
But it seems like, you know, from my perspective, just to get this out here right off the bat, so nobody has any questions about where I am. I think the idea of having faster startups is not bad. I think the way that the team that's implementing it is implementing it in very much a blob sort of fashion where, hey, let's take this thing and then leverage it into this and leverage it into this, and now it's everywhere. And I think that's crap because it's monolithic and it goes against the old style Unix way where you have one thing, does it well, interfaces text. That's, you know, crazy guys like Kernighan and Ritchie said, hey, this is really awesome. And now Red Hat and who's the name? Pottering? Seems to think that he knows better. And for some reason, he was able to convince his bosses that he did. So, but
let's have a
that's
fun.
Slide one.
Yeah, we're not going to get very far on the slideshow here, folks. Next page.
Oh, but the nice thing is we can actually see each other during this flame war, and it's not like, oh my God, you're such crap.
Here's the fun part. All of his complaints, I almost agree with. Almost. The last one. Y'all remember the last one, right?
Which is that Pottering and the development crew are awesome and everybody loves them.
Yeah, everybody loves them, right? And not even close. Let's have a little fun. This is from Linus telling them basically to go shove it up their ass.
And context around this, I believe this was...
not that long ago either.
This was in relation to the bug that they introduced.
Debug on the kernel boot line.
You passed debug to the kernel boot line, and because of the implementation of systemd, that freaked the hell out of the logging system for systemd.
Yes. So, I am not going to stand up here and say systemd is wonderful. I work with it every day. I find it to be a challenge, but I also find it to be very beneficial. So, I want to back up just a second and cover something that was said, and I'm going to move the microphone closer so I can put my hands on the keyboard here. The purpose of systemd was not to make your system faster. It was to do the Unix version of let's make your box run. It's a single concept. It was supposed to be implemented well, and they're not there yet. Anybody run Pulse Audio on their box?
What?
Anybody have sound that works on their computer? It's probably running Pulse Audio. Guess who wrote it? Leonard Pottering. When he was 14. I know. Exactly. And for the first 4 years, it was an absolute piece of dog crap. It did not work. But the outcome of it, once they got the thing going, was it managed to route sound to kind of wherever you wanted it. And sound just kind of works. You can actually squeeze two soundtracks into the same pair of speakers. Of course, it sounds like crap. It's exactly what you expect, right? It's like having two pieces of music playing on two different stereos at once coming into your ears. It works. Systemd is a different process. Here's what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to start your system, make sure everything comes up like you want it to, restart things if they fail, notify you if it's not supposed to restart them. It really is the one concept of an init, whereas previously System 5 was this series of disparate bash scripts that would do all sorts of weird crap. And so anybody have to administer distros, different distros? Yeah. Isn't it fun? You go back and forth between trying to get something to start between an Ubuntu system, a SUSE system, a Red Hat system, a Slackware system. My God, it's a nightmare. Slackware will never go systemd.
At least Ubuntu's starting to go to systemd.
Yeah. So it's a new thing. Is that a good thing? When Sys5 was started, we didn't have the network we have now. We didn't have the processes we have now. So the intermediate thing was Upstart. Anybody mess with Upstart? Anybody scream with Upstart? Anybody shake your fist at the sky and scream, I hate you, Upstart? Yeah, I still do. So it was kind of like the idea of why they looked at doing something. Upstart was designed to start the system faster. And systemd said, well, we can do better than that. And in some cases they have, in other cases they haven't. The debug script, the debug command line, man, that was a brilliant piece of stupid. This is a brilliant piece of stupid. So, Sys5 uses a bunch of simple scripts, requires a shell. In other words, the system has to actually run some kind of a shell. Anybody run an Ubuntu system that found out that your init shell was not bash by the hard way? Find out the differences between bash and dash? Yeah, that was fun. Not a good day. So, suddenly you wind up in run level 1, and you don't have bash. You have something different. and also because everything was serialized, it was a joy. Lots of experience with Sys5. Hey, it does work. Upstart, Dbus for internal communications. That was kind of a biggie, and the parallel startup, nice. Honestly, I don't run a whole lot of desktop stuff. I run a laptop. That's kind of it. All of my stuff are all servers. And the slowest thing on a startup is not getting the system to go from kernel to login. It's getting past the damn BIOS. Yeah, why is it that you can have a box that's got 135, you know, cores from the thing and 3 terabytes of RAM, and it takes 18 minutes to start?
Well,
thank you, IBM.
Or HP, or Dell. And part of the reason for that is that they want to have all sorts of redundant checks and make sure everything starts up right. And if nothing's right, they also have to load up all the stuff that says, hey, by the way, Dell or HP or whoever the hell, let me send out some auto support messages for whatever your crap is. So
absolutely.
That's why.
And I've seen IBM's back-end stuff. It blips occasionally, and it is running Linux.
Yeah.
So their system init's, and they've got an embedded Linux and thing, which, by the way, can't be updated when it's a security problem with your hardware. Oh, never mind. We'll get to that in a minute. Systemd, highly parallel, uses Dbus. It's working on KDbus, which is the kernel Dbus. Anybody have to mess with this stuff? Anybody know what kernel Dbus is? Yeah, it's terrible. It's not there yet. It's not, well, actually, what is out there in terms of using systemd is not using kernel Dbus yet. It is not ready yet. What it means from a user standpoint is you'll never see it. It just sort of runs in the background. It's cool. It's processed to pass messages all over the place. That's nice. But yeah, if you're seeing it as a user, something bad has happened. All right. The biggie that systemd does that I do appreciate, although the only thing I'm running that actually breaks all the time is anything running Tomcat Java stuff. That's a different belly accession. Yep. Systemd can restart stuff that pukes. So your Apache's running, your Tomcat's running, and you've got crappy code. It's Java. By default, it's crappy code. It blows up your box. Your system is still running, but that particular thread has failed, and systemd will go and restart it. You don't have to write a script for it anymore. Does it work? Most of the time. Is it perfect? Yeah, we're not there yet. This is completely illegible. So this is a list of capabilities between System5 init, Upstart, and systemd. And most of them are really not that important, but there's some of them that are. And I think I pulled out bits of these, but I probably didn't. That's too hard to read. Everyone's favorite tools inside systemd are systemctl and journalctl. So it's controlling the system and controlling the journal. I got to get him another chance to babble here for a minute. And journalctl, the journal in systemd, is wonderful. Take it away, Dylan.
I'm sorry, did binary logging is wonderful?
Oh, yes. ASCII is not binary, by the way. Oh, I'm sorry. You can read ASCII off of the hard drive without using a computer-based tool? Actually, I'm gonna completely not let him play with this one at all. I'll give you another one in a minute. ASCII is a binary format. You need to realize that, right? It's all ones and zeros on that hard drive. It's either spin up or spin down, or north up, north down, whatever it is. ASCII was cool, and the only reason that it's looking to be replaced is because why? Because the world does not speak English. And so we have to support other languages, and ASCII just is not a big enough code base for it. But yeah, so we've got it in a binary format, requires a tool to read, and it kind of reminds people a lot of what other operating system uses binary format logging? Oh yeah, the evil empire out in Redmond. So yeah, that bunch. But yeah, it's a binary format. Here's the cool thing. It's really, really tiny. It throws stuff all over the network. If you set up to go split logging, local and off somewhere else, it works pretty well. It works real well with containers. Anybody run containers? Anybody run a chroot? Anybody run bind in a chroot? Yeah, that's basically a container. For some reason, they decided to put market speak out there and call chroots containers now. So this is really, and I'll shut up in just a second. This is really the big thing that systemd does, is it works well for a chrooted environment. Old chroot, you could not open a chroot within a chroot. The container concept, you can open a container and it can have subcontainers. And this gives you the ability to control those processes from one master process. But it also doesn't leak. Works well with C groups. But ain't perfect. Ask Dylan.
Well, I mean, my comment on that would be the same one that you were talking about Pulse Audio before, how that works really well, but you know, the pottering route. I don't give a fuck because I run servers, and if my data center has a bunch of servers that worry about audio and putting it out, then I'm probably doing the wrong thing.
Wouldn't that be a distro problem then?
No, that would be I don't care about audio on my servers.
Yeah, but my servers don't have audio.
Yes, neither do I, and I don't care if Pulse Audio works on them or not.
Right.
So the other thing is, works well in a shrouded environment. Why do I have to run it in a non-shrouded environment? If I'm running non-shrouded systems, yes, I understand containers are all the rage. You know, oh my God, we totally got to go to Docker because that's the best thing ever. But if I'm not doing that, why do I have to change the way that my default stuff is working? The default vanilla system is to work well in that custom environment. What works well in shrouded environments, but I don't care. Why would I be forced, though, to move over to that for the standard distribution of pretty much every Linux system now? Because, hey, the big vendor is Red Hat, and they are the ones who move the needle. And they're the ones who decide, let's go over to this. Why do I have to move over to that if I don't need to make use of it?
Goes back to that one tool does one thing.
But it doesn't.
There's two tools. There's Sys5 and there's SystemD. So you learn one.
Well, but there's Sys5 and SystemD, and there was also SMF for Solaris, which is really, you know, hey, you want to talk about fast startup? That was fast startup.
I don't play with toys from Oracle unless they're... I don't play with toys from Oracle, so I don't really know that much about it.
SMF was before it was acquired by Oracle, and it's also available in Open Solaris, which is not something that's taken care of at Oracle or whatever some of the other things that are off of that. But you know, from a functionality perspective, why do I need that extra functionality put in? Hey, look, I want to be able to make a margarita while I'm driving cross country. So let's make sure that a blender is included in every car. Right? Is there a problem with that?
Depends on who's driving. If it's me and the blender, we're not going to be doing well. I like margaritas, sorry.
Well, that's great, and you can add it as a third-party thing. I mean, there's nothing preventing... you were talking about restarting systems. You know what did really good at that? Daemon Tools. Mm-hmm. You could install that. Why do I have to have SystemD put in a new thing by default that's required on new distributions that I can't select as an option? Because isn't Linux all about choice? Isn't there the choice of what, you know, do I want to have a minimal installation, or do I want to be able to have a desktop installation that has audio, or do I want to have a developer one that has GCC, or do I want to have one that doesn't have a init startup that requires me to link it to libpng because of the UI stuff that is included in the, you know, larger tool set? Oh wait, no, I can't do that now. If I want to install a Red Hat 7 based system, so CentOS 7 or the newer Fedoras, I got to do this crap. And why? Because Pottering thinks it's awesome. And it's not that I don't think that some of the goals are there. I think that Pottering is a jackass, an arrogant jackass, who thinks he knows better than everybody else.
Hear, hear.
And I'm sad that his overlords at Red Hat haven't come and said, what the fuck are you doing? You stupid idiot. How many people are you know, how many flame wars are here? I mean, how many people left the Debian council because of this? Because, oh, wait, we got to go over this because we're being forced to, and we don't think it's a good thing, but it's a shitty process, and we don't want to be a part of it.
Yeah, how's that fork working of Debian, by the way?
Actually, pretty well.
Good. So, there you go. Options. Linux has the freedom to not use systemd.
You have to fork off. But, yeah, the major distributions are following.
Yep.
and Slackware as well. Oh, and also, this may be a bad thing. FreeBSD, it turns out, works really well and doesn't have the bullshit of systemd. So...
BSD style init scripts suck.
Well, they
don't worry. They'll get upstart soon
for startup. but actually, the the Solaris SMF stuff is actually really well, and it's sort of the same idea when I saw it initially 8 years ago or 9 years ago or something like that. It takes some of the same ideas that Veritas clustering has for dependencies for startups, mm-hmm. and being able to parallelize a lot of that stuff. And I can't imagine that BSD won't have something like that relatively soon. It's a good idea, but I will agree. System 5 and the BSD startups, having to do the linear stuff. I agree. That's definitely a downside. It's simple, but parallelizing things is a little hard sometimes.
Oh yes. So.
Does anybody recall what the startup system for Apple is? Anybody? LaunchD, thank you. To the FreeBSD point, don't worry, FreeBSD will be getting that soon enough.
Come to NetBSD.
It'll run on your toaster.
Yeah.
So, anybody have any ideas as to what systemd is an illusion of? I mean, anybody have any illusions as to what systemd is for? Questions, comments? Your hand went up again. Throw him the orange block.
Yes, he's had his hand up for a few times.
And we're ignoring him.
Rightfully so. So startup in Linux is slow. Apparently, you guys can't use syslog appropriately and all the rest of this stuff. And it's effectively been because all of these distros are constantly trying to pile more and more and more onto these systems. Initd scripts, you're populating a directory, you have to resolve dependencies, you have to do all this stuff, and that's taking time. You're aware you can just write one script, right? You can copy the blocks of the things that you need on your server and turn it into a 100-something line shell script and your system is up? No, of course not, because you've got desktop, you've got all the rest of this stuff, and you've got third parties who are trying to build packages, and the packages need to register, and so rather than actually try to come up with some real mechanism for deconflicting dependencies and all the rest of it, you have all of these goofy little checks, and it's gotten so bad, a pottering comes along and says, I'm going to sweep all of this away and save you all from the madness that we caused. I wonder where that is. You just spoke about how this is really good for synchronizing containers. Containers should not be synchronized. They should not have the ability to communicate outside of the network. That is the whole reason to have a container.
Actually, they don't. You just seem to miss a point there. I'm sorry if I didn't make that clear. It's not so that containers can synchronize between containers unless you choose to do that. It is the ability for the overarching system controller to be able to see inside the container to catch the logging. So in the event that you've got a container that's running, say, some security software, and somebody tries to break it, the system has a bug and it crashes. Systemd knows this and can alert whoever needs to be there on the receiving end of this. It is not going to pass data from one to the other. That brings up the problem of bugs within systemd itself.
Yes.
Any stack can be smashed, which is why systemd works really closely inside of C groups. So the idea being that if you have your system set up right, and honestly, I'm not proficient enough yet to be able to say how much memory does a systemd setup need for this process and this process. If you know that and you've tested this stuff, then you can set up the C group so that it has a maximum memory allocation space. So there's absolutely, I don't want to say absolutely no way possible, but it's pretty damned hard for somebody to come in and do a stack smash and do anything useful with it, because you're already set. That's all you get. If you try to write outside of that C group, the kernel says, oh, hell no, and kills the process. But what that means from the standpoint of your system running is systemd goes, oops, that process went down. It's supposed to be running. Something went wrong. It notifies, and out the door it goes. And then it starts the process back up again, depending on how you write things. And I can't, again, I can't write stuff like this yet. I'm a sysadmin, not a programmer. But I also want to giggle. I like to go looking at all of the people that were bellyaching about this on the mailing lists and on kernel.org and everybody yelling and screaming about the thing, and then go take all of their emails and go sifting back through the kernel and see how many commits they have.
Right.
Well,
but not a whole lot.
But you
and
just
the
said.
People, the people that were saying, well, you know, this isn't that bad of an idea. It's not perfect. We'll work on it. They do have commits in the kernel. And so it's the sysadmins that are really bitching and moaning about this, because let's face it, this crap's hard. It's a lot different from old sys5. It's a lot harder.
Anyway, the point being, there's at best a fifth IPC mechanism coming out through KDBus and all the rest of the stuff. And I mean, you can identify two or three covert channels immediately by just one-way communication. I'm not seeing the reason to do any of this. For 60 years, we've managed to run these systems. And now systemd is going to come and solve problems that have been solved so many times.
Do you want to get security updates or functionality updates for your Red Hat-based systems?
I don't want Red Hat-based systems.
Well, no. That's what I'm asking. Do you
remember that question earlier? Or, how many people want to get paid to work with Linux?
Or do you want?
Probably going to run Red Hat.
Or do you want to get functionality updates for your Ubuntu-based systems, or Debian-based systems?
Define functionality updates. The answer is usually no. If I'm running my application, which is the reason to have the computer, by the way, not to run operating systems.
No. I totally agree with you. But you were saying. If I remember correctly, you said there's not a reason for me to upgrade to introduce the complexity of systemd. Unfortunately, the reason to introduce the complexity of it is because every major distribution is going to this, and if you want to be able to make use of EPL for your CentOS-based systems or CentOS or something like that, or the equivalent for Debian-based systems. This shit's going to come along. I mean, you're going to come to a point where it's like, okay, I want to have PHP whatever the fuck version. Then I'm going to have to install this because there's some stupid dependency down the tree that requires me to eventually get down to systemd.
You know, we've been this way before. And this wasn't just the first time that Red Hat has said, we're going to do this. Anybody remember the switch from A.out binary format to ELF? That was fun. It was painful. All of a sudden, the old code you had didn't run.
Well, binaries you had didn't run. You just had to recompile.
Right. But in that kind of, it's, this isn't exactly the same, but it's along the same mentality. Red Hat said, we're going to do this. And everybody else went, oh, crap, Red Hat's doing it. Now we got to do it. Well, they don't have to, but they could. So they all kind of did it. We survived. Do I think that systemd is the end-all, be-all of stuff? Nah, we'll come up with something different. Upstart didn't last long. System files have been changed and changed and changed and changed and changed. What is it that Red Hat has? NASH. They've got their not a shell. And all that was designed so that you can't have rogue code starting at the beginning of the kernel. So the kernel cart starts up and it's easier, it's smaller. They can actually embed the damn thing in the kernel. So a lot of the mentality behind the changes here are really about securing your box. And granted, from a business standpoint, who does Red Hat make their money from? Not you and me, unless you like get to be a purchasing manager occasionally. They make the money off the people who are going to pay them to run their boxes and write the code and do the security stuff for them. That means the feds and banking. And there's a vested interest in making sure the stuff works. Everybody's perfectly familiar with SE Linux, right? And how wonderful, big bunch of nightmare that was when it came out. By the way, this is a running a Fedora 22. SE Linux is on it. I didn't do anything other than stick the disk in and load it up and run it. Oh, and fight with the wireless because it's a stupid Broadcom chip. But SE Linux, it's out there. Everybody kind of uses it now. The old adage was, first thing you do, you turn that damn thing off. And what do you do now? No, you don't turn it off.
Well, you may not.
Well, I work in healthcare with PHI stuff. I leave it on.
Yeah, yeah. I
if you don't have it, yeah, it can eat some of your system resources. So heck, turn it off.
Well, no. I work at Fortune 50 company, but we actually do development and put stuff in non-standard locations. And the last thing I want to do is have an on-air problem because Linux doesn't like where one of my developers put a log file. And amazingly enough, developers like to put log files in many different locations. And
developers need a little more training.
No.
Developers need to work as a sysadmin for a while.
And that's actually the whole. I had a 5-minute lightning talk at DevOps Days about developers need to be on call for precisely this reason.
Exactly.
That's right. But that's not a realistic expectation in a lot of places.
Yes.
So. Being able to admin defensively and turn SE Linux off so shit doesn't break because of SE Linux, yeah, turn it off. Now, if you're doing something like the Red Hat certification exam or something like that, yeah, if everything's written exactly and does it in the right places and sets the right attributes and all that sort of stuff, and you're doing a very vanilla setup, works awesome. If not, all of a sudden, stuff breaks and you're effed. So
that's why I got my own custom policy files.
I've already dropped my requisite F-bombs. We're already past PG-13. You have been very quiet this entire time. I'm sure you have something to say.
I'm just entertained by the two of you. I'm sure the rest of everybody else is, so I'll just be keeping my mouth shut.
Gotcha. Anybody else have any questions? Yes, sir, right there.
Yeah, so excuse my lack of knowledge, but I figured I'd ask you guys. So if everyone's really salty about the introduction of System D, so why can't people just fork it and then just use the fork without System D, right? Well, or is it you're forced to use Red Hat where you work? So, you know.
Yeah, so it turns out there's a lot of vendors who say, if you're going to run my software, you need to run it on this version of Red Hat or else I'm not going to support you. And so if you have multi-petabytes of backup, tape backup, or if you have something that is specific that you've paid a lot of vendor money for or your continuing update, backup was the first thing that came to mind because I know that we have a multi-petabyte thing that relies on versions of Red Hat. You have to install their version, and it has to be whatever it says. And when they go to Red Hat 7, I'm going to have to deal with that. You know, Red Hat is the sort of gold standard, but some people, you know, do the same thing for Ubuntu or the same thing for Debian. And when you have to update to support your versions of whatever software to stay in compliance with, we are end-of-lifing this version and we're not going to support it anymore after whatever. Yeah, you got to do that.
Okay, so there's no major distribution that's System D then?
No, all of the major distributions have jumped on the System D bandwagon, which is really one of the things that has upset a lot of people.
What do you? So is it mostly sysadmins that are getting upset, or are developers too?
It's a little of both.
Okay,
but as an end user, I mean, I've used it every day. In addition to work, I use it at home, and don't think I've come into an instance where I've had a problem with it on my personal desktop. So as an end user, you get a faster system, but I haven't really seen any problems.
Right. What problems do you have with NFD?
Oh,
hold on. Wait. Before you need to raise your hand so we can pass the box over to you if you need to. The question was, how many problems do you have with initd, or how many did you have with initd?
Well, that's a fair question, and probably just as few. But I got some benefit out of systemd that equaled a faster system, and with C groups and the lack of sleep right now, my memory's escaping me. But C groups and
lack of sleep at Dragon Con? Seriously?
Oxymoron. Doesn't work. Never happens.
But you get a more... with the process isolation, you also theoretically have a more secure system as well. So
one of the cool things you do get out of systemd that is, as an admin on a daily basis, I use the ability to look to see what the status of a process is. And that gives you a lot of good, useful information about whether it's running. If you started the thing manually like an idiot because you're setting up a new system and you forgot to actually enable it so that you find out that's why this thing didn't boot after process didn't start once you rebooted the box. Yeah, so system CTL, status, package name, and all kinds of magic happens. Gives you lots of information. Question?
Yes, sir. You
didn't etc/rc.d thing status also?
The sysadmit status, the service status or system status, it would give you information such as, is the PID still in the var run table? And
sure.
That was as far as it would go. Where the systemd, it will tell you what the last calls were, what the last logging stuff was. It'll tell you the PID of the system. It'll tell you where it's up. In fact, there seems to be some way, and again, this is well beyond my kernel programming understanding, it can tell you if the thing is actually still able to take information in and out or not. I could show it.
You know what else could do that? VCS and any other sort of HA heart beating mechanism as well. So if you wanted that, yeah, you can install those sorts of things for your applications and not have to do it across the board.
Yeah, but across the board means I only got one tool and I can look and see why my Tomcat's puking just before my SSH goes down.
you with the orange box.
Just me, is there? Maybe I'm just in Dragon Con mode here, but it seems like there's a parallel to be made here between the two camps here, the ones that believe that Start ended with generation, and they don't want things to change because it's what they're.
hold it away from your mouth, and you're going to make the comparison between folks who like the old series of Star Trek and folks who like the new series?
Yes.
Because Kirk is awesome and Picard's a little pansy?
Yes. Is it just me, or is that...
Or vice versa. I'm not saying. I would push back on the idea that I will recast that and say that I am the one who's saying this is change without a significant benefit, and if there was a significant benefit to make up, so it's a cost benefit analysis, right? The cost is we're blowing up the world to a certain extent to be able to get something that is arguably better. I don't believe the benefits are worth the cost. It's not that I'm trying to be dogmatic and stick to my old ways, because I'm a long gray beard and I've been doing this for I don't know how many decades.
And I'm older than everybody up here.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to be the crusty old admin who doesn't want things to change. If something changes for Dune, you know, that's awesome. And I get a big benefit, but there's a lot of let's take logging for just a second. There's a lot of solutions that have been in place for logging that now have to take into account. Hey, wait, no, I'm not getting ASCII anymore. I'm not getting something that is the lingua franca of everything and has been for 40 years.
They still do take ASCII. It still runs syslog. It still runs syslog in Next Generation as well. So if your application will talk to that, it still works. And
that talks to
like
it, but doesn't consume from it. I mean, well, you know, if you want pipes that come out of the sort of thing, you know, you have to then put another thing in the middle to translate from the binary format. And yes, technically ASCII is binary, but it's also binary that at the system and operating system level for 40 years has been the default assumption, and now you're changing that default assumption.
Same way we upgrade the kernel.
Same.
Things change. I used to hate systemd, by the way. They switched this junk in around Fedora 19, and all of a sudden, my crap didn't work. I couldn't use any of the old scripts I had to control the box. It was driving me nuts. And I started poking at it. I hesitated on switching over to 7, CentOS 7 at work, because it's a whole new kettle of fish. But I promise you, the more I've been digging in it, the more I'm finding it. This is actually pretty cool. There's a lot of stuff you can get in out of this. It gives you an insight into what your system is doing that is more complete than the sysinit scripts ever could do, because you have to go through multiple locations to find the same level of information. There's an advantage to that. There's a disadvantage to that. And I, quite frankly, from the security standpoint, I'm hoping that the people that are really, really good at understanding the security of systems at the memory level are beating systemd to death and making sure it's not full of holes, because this is going to be the nightmare if systemd is found to have problems with it controlling a bunch of junk. That said, there's not a whole bunch of stuff out there that is rated to run on, say, RHEL 7 that wasn't running on RHEL 6, and that's why a lot of people are holding off on it, because it's a big change. So, still kind of fun, though.
You with the orange box.
Yeah, so something that I noticed not a lot of people have either been aware of or mentioned or whatever is you can actually rip systemd out of Debian 7 still, or Debian 8 rather. So that's a possibility. And I run 7 at work. I run systemd because that's what I get paid to do, like a lot of people, I guess. But at home, I rip systemd out of my systems. And I mean, that's not, I don't really have a comment about that, but it's worth considering that you can actually change it back over. So there is a little bit of choice still left in the world, I guess.
There's always Slackware.
At that point, too.
And I'm not dissing Slackware. I learned on Slackware.
And there's also the Dwava or whatever. I forget what the actual Debian fork is. That
name sounds right.
Yeah. There's the folks who are on the Debian board or whatever it is who forked off Debian into another one that doesn't have systemd. There's that. And yes, I mean, you could do that, and you could take a fork of CentOS 6 and write your entire, you know, track all the changes that are non-systemd. Is that realistic? For a lot of people, no, because the day job is not tracking changes on Linux to be able to keep it upgraded without you know, the bright idea pottering in company. You know, it's saying yes, you have the ability to do this, and then saying it is something that within your time constraints and you know, availability to do this, you're actually able to realistically do. Those are two different things. So the other thing that you get is you lose the benefits of open source, right? I mean, when a lot of people are using your software, you have many eyes make bugs shallow. At least that's the aphorism.
They actually yes. have to look at it first.
Yeah, and you know, there's dusty bits of code. I mean, yes, let's look at OpenSSL. Oh, wait, nobody wants to, because nobody can build it, even though everything runs on it. You know, it's one of those things where theoretically many people out there are able to you know, run and see if there are problems with your code. I mean, for my personal projects, I love it when more people run it and tell me that they're having problems with it, because then I can fix that. And oftentimes when I'm fixing their problems, I'm fixing something for me as well. If I'm just doing that for myself, oh, I'm gonna rip system D out because I don't want it. Nobody else gets that benefit besides me, and you lose the network effect.
Another thing to think about with the whole development process of system D and the process of it suddenly showing up in all of these distributions out there, there's a whole bunch of bright people that are involved in Linux land now. And there's a lot of them that are way, way smarter than me. They know more about how the system works. And they all signed off on this. I don't think that Red Hat quite has guns pointed at people's head telling them, you must do this or you will lose your job. I know some people that work there. I don't know that they were actually involved in this particular process, but decisions were made by people who know more about the distros than I do and the philosophies behind them. And a lot of them, all of them have chosen, we're gonna do System D. It's not perfect, but it's better than what we had, and it gives us things that we want. There's a trade-off.
So,
the trade-off is in complexity. It is a far more complex system. But if you go back, anybody got your old CDs or your old floppies from when you downloaded a billion years ago? And, you know, it's a lot more complicated now. There's a whole lot more stuff that goes on in the box. Even if you rip out the desktop in Linux is god-freaking-awful in terms of what it does and all the different daemons it has running in the background. GNOME, I'm looking at you.
Are you using GNOME on that?
I am using GNOME on my laptop. It just works. Sometimes I have to pick the battles, and it just worked. Everything but, except for the Broadcom.
So to go to the point of there are smart people at Red Hat, yeah, and all of them agreed. That's debatable.
No, they did not all agree. In fact, there was a good fight that went on, a very public fight that went on between three or four of the guys at Red Hat saying that this exactly the same argument, this does not solve a problem that exists. And the other arguments came in of, yes, but it solves these. And they wound up losing the argument. How many fights have we had in the kernel about schedulers? They get a new scheduler, what, every version, every major version and every couple of minor versions, I think. So, and the fights there are almost as vitriolic. So if you do a scheduler that's really good for servers, it kind of blows if you're running a laptop. If you have power management, my God, power management is for your laptop, not for your server. Your server, you want it to suck down every gigawatt you can get your hands on. For your laptop, you want this thing to be picowatts, okay? And so the process is different. And that's kind of the same fight that's going on with systemd and systemnet and init 5. I'll get it right in a minute. So it's two different ends of a spectrum.
Except that I don't get to choose between my laptop and my desktop, or between my laptop and my server. The same. One size is going to fit everything, because Red Hat says that, and because they have the majority share, everybody else is following.
I thought Ubuntu was the most commonly installed distro these days.
Not from a vendor supported standpoint. And I think
Red Hat said that
all the money goes
teeth.
To
all
the money goes to Red Hat, right? I mean, or software that supports Red Hat. So I mean, they really are the ones that drive the bus as far as corporate adoption.
Absolutely.
So they make the decision and everybody else follows. I mean, that's like saying, okay, you know what? We're going to go with scheduling and such for laptops because we want to sell more laptops. And my servers are going to suck ass because of that. And that's not having the option, not having a way of doing that. And because it doesn't solve problems that are really there. Yeah. Anyway, yes, sir. Mac. You who are about to have the orange box.
So I'm a former sysadmin, currently a developer. And a little while ago, I was writing a daemon process, and I needed to start it up. This was on a system that was now running systemd, and I found a 10-line text file that made perfect sense when I read it, as opposed to like a 50-line bash script that's just a horrible mess. And I think that's a huge win.
Define horrible mess. I mean, so /etc/init.d/functions, and then a start function and a stop function. I mean, how much new code would you write for an initd process or for an initd script?
Oh, not much.
Not much.
Taking
right?
that stuff, copy pasting, and then making the errors associated with copy paste.
So yeah, and that config file that you would write for the systemd, what's the language that you would write that in?
It's its own config language, and it's really simple.
Wait. So now I got to learn a new config language. I can't just use Bash. I can't look at the 40 years of how do I parse command line arguments? How do I pass variables? How do I do arrays? How do I do all this awesome stuff in Bash programming?
Oh my God, he might have to learn something new.
It literally
wow,
was just signing variables.
How did he get into Linux if he was using Windows?
Versioning.
Well, versioning.
I'd rather learn something like Go or something that actually is not a new configuration language. But but you know saying that, oh my God, the length of the script that I need to run is big compared to this config file is small. Yeah, but there's semantic import and a semantic payload that comes along with that script. That
I doesn't call you can also cut
inherently.
And paste on systemd startup scripts too, and I seem to recall it's like about 5 lines.
But he brings up a good point about the barrier to entry.
Whoa, hold on! I bring up a good point. No, that doesn't happen. Does. No, he does. Yes, okay.
About the barrier to entry, it's very very easy for someone who a developer, even if you don't have a system administrator background, to open up the documentation for systemd, open up a new file and make your startup file. It's the same reason why we've moved from raw containerization to Docker.
And what I want to do is make it easier for developers, and that's why Mongo is so prevalent, because it's so easy for a developer to spin that up instead of actually spinning up MySQL. Oh, but it doesn't work very well in production, unless you want to write only database. Mongo is great if you want to write only database, but if you want to actually get your values back reliably, not so great. I mean,
why would I want to make life easier for a developer?
Oh, you know what?
Ever.
You know what else is web scale? Dev null. Dev null is web scale.
So,
yay, Postgres.
So what we've basically learned is that systemd is an API for Linux. If you're writing an application and you want to use Linuxy things and you have systemd is the way you do that, that's wonderful. Logging and start and status and all the rest of this. And devs probably will eat that crap.
Actually, that's a very good way to think about it. You're exactly yes. correct. It is an API for your system.
And like every other API, you're going to have versioning issues. Because that config file this gentleman just wrote for systemd 0.9, come systemd 2, somebody is going to have an additional option that is not going to be back supported, that is going to have all this usual breakage that appears whenever you have an API that is evolving and constantly getting better and all the rest of that. So have we just been captured by the distros? Linux was an open source, community developed operating system. Well, if you're not going to play systemd ball and have all the systemd resources and your devs need this API to integrate with Linux, and the guys who run it are Red Hat, did Red Hat just capture all of Linux?
Yes.
I think there was a...
Hand in the back.
I'd say that I think Red Hat just peed in the pool and everybody else can swim in that or not, but...
I had been... under Linux, but I do a lot of development, and to kind of get to the point about the configure script or that, it seems like everything now is we're going to take all the logic away and you're going to write a configuration file with just equal sign assignments or colon space, you know, key value pairs.
Some YAML or some JSON or something
exactly.
Like that.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. That's everything that I'm developing, you know, in my job. It's like, okay, I've got a huge bunch of config files instead of bash scripts. There's logic I can follow. This configuration file, okay, I have to learn that language. I have to learn, you know, YAML, JSON, XML, the syntax sets for, you know, pom.xml files for, you know, web deployment, all those things. That stuff, it's like, okay, it's taking away the thinking part and more the reading part. And, you know, it's the kind of working along that lines in the sense that it's putting a layer of obscurity, not really hard, but, you know, another, you know, not barrier or entry, but at least hurdle to get a system going.
You're hitting on an area of computer stuff that just yanks my chain, because the mode has been, as far as I can remember, to try and go for more and more and more abstraction. You've got layers that are abstracted upon layers that are abstracted in layers and layers and layers, and you are correct in that you wind up with a config file that has a whole bunch of variables in it, and something else is going to parse that file, and then something else is going to parse that parsed file, and then something else is going to say, yeah, we got everything we need to start, and then systemd goes boom. So, and that's kind of seems to be the ongoing history. Anybody ever program in like a really low level language? Yeah, there's no abstraction there. And I still blows my mind to think that C was considered a high-level language. Try teaching that in CompSci now. Right.
But it's the
mentality that goes along with the computer stuff. And that's kind of the mentality that led us to getting the systemd to start in the first place.
But that's, you know, and maybe that's part of the reason why I dislike it.
I still code in Fortran.
The first time I was introduced to Python, it was include this thing, okay, and then include this thing. And it was four levels deep before I found a function that actually did what I was trying to figure out it was doing with the software or the code base that I was working at. So, you know, in my opinion, obfuscating functionality is never good. You know, being able to make it so that somebody can look at a file and see what's going on, or make it easy to trace down to find out why is this thing behaving this way when I put this in, and why is it not, you know, why doesn't it behave this other way the way that I expect? Because if you don't have the functions available to you or the functionality available to you to easily inspect, it's great if you don't want to mess with that and if it works exactly the way that you want. But if it doesn't, and how many times does it work exactly the way you want the first time? Any show of hands?
My code has no bugs. I'm lying through my teeth.
Being able to go in and say, okay, here's, you know, where's the function that it's calling? What arguments is it expecting? Am I giving it what it needs? Or, you know, being able to do a set minus x at the right place. Can I do a set minus x on the config parse? I can't. And I can't see what's going on when shit hits the fan and it doesn't work the right way.
Systemd debug. It's supposed to be a joke.
Yeah, and hope that it doesn't get passed to the kernel.
Yeah. I have to admit, that really was one of the stupidest things I've ever heard of in my life, that they would actually put that call on the command line and think that this isn't going to go to the kernel. What? Why did they not say systemd.debug? Any moron, including me, would have gone, wow, that makes sense. Let's call it what we want to debug. Everything else you pass to the kernel, you name it what you're going to do with it. Why would you not do that with systemd?
Well, there's no way there's going to be a namespace collision.
Yeah. Pottering has definitely read all the docs in the kernel. But
we got about 5 minutes left. Anybody else have any outstanding questions or any comments that they want to give to us?
Systemd rocks.
You, sir. Yes. Did you have anything you wanted to say?
No.
Anyway. Oh, by the way.
Quick raise of hands. How many people are currently running a systemd system? How many people are currently running a non-systemd system? How many people really like going back and forth between the two? Yeah, the escape key does this on this machine. Oh, that's Mars, by the way. That's taken from the picture of another planet.
Wait, I don't see the spider on there,
or the spoon,
or the picture of the woman, or the face. Or
the face was Darth Vader, by the way.
A cow. Yeah, yeah.
Anything questions, comments? We have an orange box floating around. Who's buying the beer?
Let me say thank you guys very much for coming out and Absolutely. Putting up with us and our little back and forth. This track would be nothing without you guys showing up. There'd be no reason to be here. Hope you guys have a great Dragon Con. Please, if you have the Dragon Con app, rate the panel and all the panels that you see, whether you like them or not. And that way, you'll get more of what you want next year if you come back. And we'd love for you guys to come back. Take care.